Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. We're coming to you live from New Zealand from Mount Maunganui as we build up to England's first test against the Black Caps. Remember, every ball live and exclusive here on TalkSport 2. We'll hear on this show from England head coach Brendan McCullum, as well as England's greatest ever bowlers Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson. Ollie Robinson discusses the difference between a pink ball and the red one ahead of the day-night test match. And we'll also hear an exclusive interview with England opener Ben Duckett. We'll look at the hosts who've been dealt a double blow ahead of this week's first test. And we'll look back at a dominant win for India against Australia in the first Border Gavaskar test match. So plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Tommy and I are sitting in our commentary box at the Bay Oval in Mount Maunganui. It's been a very, very interesting couple of days, Harmy, with Cyclone Gabriel petering out, I think, before it reached us, after we'd stocked up on 3 days of food. We're sitting here looking at an oval which looks like it has been gently watered and not had a monsoon of rain on it for 3 days. What a pleasure to be here.
It is. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And to be honest, a lot of places, a lot of cricket grounds around the world, we probably wouldn't have played for a week with the amount of rain we've just had. And this, you know, if you asked that, walking around it a little bit earlier, we mentioned it would be, honestly, I'd be upset to hit a 9-iron off the top of the surf, off the top of the turf. I'd probably most, a lot of Parklands courses in the summer wouldn't have greens as good as the outfield at Mount Maunganui. It is. It looks absolutely beautiful. You've got to get full value for your shots if you you hit one through the field on this surface, because, you know, even though it is a big ground, I would imagine it'll run very, very fast. And the mount is in the background. New Zealand players are about to come on and take their practice, and we're getting closer. You know, we've been here for nearly a week now. It feels as though we've been here for a fortnight. Well, to be fair, I've been cycloned in with Sam Ellard for 2 days. It feels like I've been in there for a week. So it's been a great experience coming over. We're sitting in the commentary box looking at a green surface. It is glowing. It is. It's luminous green, the surface 2 days out. England, I fully expect them to pick their three seamers who will probably lick their lips in Broad, Anderson and Robinson to take the field on Thursday afternoon. And I think we are all ready for what is going to be, I would say, an exciting two test matches.
Tell you what's been really interesting as well is talking to all the locals about Brendan McCullum. And we've known ever since he was appointed as England's test captain that New Zealanders are very proud of him. But, you know, I was speaking to Tim Southey, and he said that they enjoyed Brendan McCullum as captain. They enjoyed his creativity, his out-of-the-box thinking. And, you know, it's almost like they're so proud of him that they're happy for another team to get the benefit of his foresight and his sort of revolutionary thinking. And let's hear from Brendan McCullum. He was talking a little bit earlier this week.
In any job that you do, right, you want to have fun. Otherwise, what's the point in doing it? I think, you know, we get one crack at life and you've got some skills in something and you've got some aspirations and dreams in it. Why would you not want to try and live those out and have a smile on your face while you're doing it? Test cricket in particular, it's such a difficult game, and these guys have got so many options around the world now as well, that it's not just about having fun on the field, it's about being able to create some memories and relationships and friendships which last well beyond your cricketing careers. And that's how I like to view this time that we've got as a team. And it's not always going to be rosy, but the one thing you can do is keep bringing that same sort of positive attitude and belief and keep trying to look after one another and enjoy yourself.
Brilliant stuff, Brendan McCullum, talking about just having fun. It didn't sound particularly believable when he first said that that was the basis of his coaching philosophy, but everybody else has endorsed it now. And just before we hear from you, Harmy, this is what Stuart Broad said about the effect that McCullum's philosophy has had on him and the other players.
Baz has got a great mentality for the group and life, really, just making sure that memories are a very important thing of playing for England, because you can quite easily let your England career sort of pass you by thinking about pressure and results and performances all the time, whereas actually we're really fortunate to come to some wonderful places and, you know, open your eyes and enjoy what's there to be seen.
Stuart Broad, I mean, he's at the stage of his career now, having just become a father, when he can enjoy it and treat every test match like it's going to be his last. But it's the younger players as well, you know. I mean, when you were playing test cricket, you know, it was a sort of matter of life and death. It's amazing to watch guys like Harry Brook walk out there and actually follow instructions and have fun.
It is. It's a breath of fresh air, to be honest. I think I've seen Brendan McCullum smile more times between lunch and tea than I did Duncan Fletcher in 8 years playing for him. But, yeah, sorry, Duncan, that's another dig at him. So, it was just a different world, a different game. Nasser Hussain. Can you imagine Nasser Hussain and Brendan McCullum? It's like the recipe for disaster. The two of them would just clash all the time. Played in a different way, understand the game differently. Not one was right, not one was wrong. But the sign of the times has changed. The outlook of cricket has changed. Young players not playing warm-up games. They're going straight into test matches, going straight into international cricket, because the amount of cricket they're playing around the world, it's a breath of fresh air. And when Tim Southee talks so positively about Brendan McCullum, it's because Brendan McCullum met a lot of these players. Brendan McCullum give a lot of these players their careers, and not just because he picked them in the team, but he nurtured them, he helped them, he mentored them, and he, you know, pushed them down an avenue which was to enjoy what you've got, enjoy your playing international cricket, you know, express yourself the best person you possibly can be. Not too dissimilar to somebody who retired not long, you know, this very, very week. And when you look at what Owen Morgan did for English cricket, and a lot of these England players, it's not too dissimilar to what Brendan McCullum did for the whole host of superstars that New Zealand have got that took them to the World Test Championship. That was largely down to the leadership qualities of Brendan McCullum. So both countries who are going to play in this game have benefited from having the expertise and the mindset of the England coach. And I think both groups will be very, very thankful for that time they had with Brendan McCullum. But he's now with England. And you mentioned Stuart Broad. He said during the week that he thought his career was over when it come to the West Indies. Him and Jimmy, England were trying to push them out the side door. And now, a lot of question marks. Would they ever play again for England? Especially overseas. Nobody would ever dreamt that Broad and Anderson would play together overseas. Well, looking at the wicket manners, I can guarantee that Broad and Anderson... I tell you what, if you think Stuart Broad was upset when he got left out at Hampshire a few years ago, in COVID, when he went on Sky and had that rant, if Brendan McCullum leaves him out, or Ben Stokes leaves Stuart Broad out of this, I think Stuart Broad might retire, because he will be the unhappiest camper ever to not play on what wicket we're seeing, 48 hours out. So, and that's testament to Broad and Anderson, who are desperate to just play, and the challenge of trying to take the bar to a whole new level. McCullum has done it, Stokes has done it, and Broad and Anderson are still doing it. I think it's brilliant for English cricket.
I just want to confirm, for the benefit of our listeners who can't see it, that you were talking about the outfield being luminous green. I mean, the actual playing, the wicket, we are 48 hours away from the start of the test match, but it is glowing like the centre of a nuclear reactor. It's just luminous green.
It's like it's got a high vis on. It's like it is. It's one of them security high vis jackets on it. You've got a lot of green grass around it, nicely fresh mowing. There's a few bare areas, and then there just seems as though that when you sometimes when you have an international venue, you have security watching the wicket. And when you're at lunchtime, at tea time, it now looks as though there's got a bloke with a reflector on either side with a luminous green high-vis jacket glowing down the wicket. No, they're not there. It is the wicket. This is what we're going to play on. If Broad, Anderson or Robinson don't play together on this, then I'll be very, very surprised.
OK, well, I would imagine that, you know, you could get a tennis ball to seam on this surface. But Jimmy Anderson spoke a couple of days ago. We'll hear from him a little bit later. But he was talking about not being particularly convinced by the pink ball. And then let's hear from Ollie Robinson as well, because he's saying that it was more difficult to bowl with the pink ball than a red one.
We've been trying a lot the last week or so to get the pink ball moving. It's proved challenging. It's not very consistent. It's not like the red ball Dukes or Kookaburra, that which swing for a little bit and you can shine them. This has got sort of another layer of lacquer on it, and it's really hard to shine and really hard to keep swinging. So there's definitely going to be different challenges, but we've got the attack bowling wise, and obviously the batters are whacking at the moment, so we've got them as well.
It's Ollie Robinson just talking about bowling with the pink ball, which is going to be used in the day-night test match. I have to say that the majority of our listeners won't have bowled much with a pink ball. I don't know how much you did, but they will not understand the concept of it's a cricket ball. Why is it more difficult to bowl with it? We're not talking about how it comes out of the hand. We're talking about how to maintain it, or how, I don't know, what are they talking about? Why is the pink ball more difficult?
Yeah, it just seems as though it's more difficult to maintain. I think when it gets wet, it balloons a little bit more and goes softer quickly. It's a Kookaburra. I just think the feel of it doesn't seem right. I'm with Ollie Robinson and Jimmy Anderson. There's a lot of talk when we come off a bad light. Well, the simple solution is to play with a pink ball, but it's what pink ball you play with. And can they get the pink ball right? I'm not sure they'll get the Dukes ones right. I'm convinced, and I go by what the experts, which is the players, Anderson, Broad, Robinson, who have spoke about it this week, they don't like playing with it. And you'd think that, yeah, let's be fair, you'd think the pink ball would do a little bit more, would swing a little bit more. Broad, Robinson, Anderson would just clap their hands. But they don't like it. And I can understand why they don't like the gimmick of it. When you look at it in the grand scheme of things, man, as we were at Hamilton a couple of days ago when the lights came on for the first time. They came on at 7:30. It was bright sunshine. Didn't need to come on. It took effect probably about 8:20. Game was finished by 9 o'clock. So it was only half an hour, really, the lights took proper effect. So that's in New Zealand. In England, if you had a day-night test match in England, middle of the summer, don't get dark till 10 o'clock. So it defeats the object for me. There are countries where you probably do, i.e. India, Pakistan, the subcontinent, and Asia, where there are a limited spell of daylight. I can understand that you might need to go down the route for that. But I think while you've got natural sunlight, the best ball is to use as the red one, and I don't see any reason why we're not using it. And it's reading the room for me. You go on reactions. I'm not having too many players say it's a good thing, this pink ball. So if the players are telling you it's not a good thing, then listen to them, because that, in theory, they're the ones that make the difference. They're the ones that accounts, and they're the ones that are there to entertain. And if your entertainer can't play with an instrument that he's being given, then if you want entertained, hopefully you can change it.
So over 60 years since the first man landed on the moon, Harmy, I'm sure they'll get the pink cricket ball right.
I'm sure they will. But we shouldn't be doing it in international cricket. We had a chance. I played in a couple of games for the MCC, against the MCC in the Champions in Abu Dhabi, and it wasn't bad. You know, you got a chance of a lie in the morning, start at 2 o'clock, so when the day's play finished, you could have a couple of beers with a view that you didn't have to get out of bed till 11:30. But if that's the only good thing that you as a bowler you can think of, then it needs changing, to be honest.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2, live from Mount Maunganui with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Steve Harmison, as we build up to TalkSport 2's live and exclusive coverage of the first test between New Zealand and England, which starts on Thursday. A moment ago, Steve Harmison and I sitting in the commentary box, and we're about two floors up in what is basically a very comfortably converted shipping container on scaffolding, and it's two floors up, and suddenly out of nowhere a window cleaner appeared to clean our commentary box window, which was very good of him, but it caught us a little bit by surprise. Okay, Harmy, let's just get straight into it and hear from Ben Duckett, who was talking a little bit earlier today with our very own Sam Ellard.
Ben, nearly there, first test nearly upon us. You've had some golf, some warm-up matches, and there's been a lot of rain. How are you and the boys shaping up for that first test match?
Yeah, good, I think. We've had, obviously, a good time. I missed out on the week in Queenstown, which I heard was great. Yeah, obviously slightly different with the weather kicking around, but, yeah, the facilities and the tent are great. So, yeah, I think we're all raring to go now.
And just for you on the last couple of months, you know, getting yourself back into the test team, what was it like coming into this exciting group of players, and how did you think you went on a personal level in Pakistan?
No, even better than I thought. I knew it was going to be great being a part of this group and under Stokesy and Baz. But I can't even say how great this environment is, how relaxed it is. It's so enjoyable to be around, and you're able to be yourself, and you know, more importantly, out in the middle, you're allowed to go and play the way you want to play. So it's a pretty special group to be a part of.
Yeah, and speaking to some of the players this week, even everyone's saying there's still so much more to come from this England team. You know, the batsmen got more runs to score. They want to take the game to another level in terms of how quickly they're scoring their runs. Do you sort of feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, we'd do well to go better than day one in Pakistan, but it's actually more simple than people probably think. You know, we don't spend a lot of time sitting down talking about it. It's generally just go out there with freedom and enjoy yourself. And yeah, I think obviously this pink ball and the conditions, you know, might be suited to going harder. Actually, I think, you know, sometimes when it's tricky, I think you'll maybe see us go even harder. Yeah, and it's going to be a really exciting series. Obviously, you know, how New Zealand are going to go about it, it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, we're all looking forward to it.
And there's some quite high profile bowlers not playing in this first test match for New Zealand, either injury or not available. And what are you then expecting from New Zealand in terms of their pace attack?
Yeah, to be honest, we're pretty focused on us. You know, most of the guys have played against a lot of them. So, yeah, generally we don't really spend too much time thinking about the opposition. You know, whoever comes out for New Zealand, we know that they're going to be a good team. We know the bowlers are going to be tough. But, yeah, it's more about trying to make us ready and focusing on how we're going to go about it.
And every test match is always important, but with an Ashes series just a couple of months away, is there sort of even more pressure on some of the guys at the top of the order to score runs in this series and deliver?
I'll leave that down to you guys, but no, not for us, to be honest. You know, it's we're just looking forward to it. Yeah, obviously it's going to be an exciting summer, but you know, we've got to go and win the games here first. You know, we started off very well this winter in Pakistan, and this will be a different challenge. So there's certainly no pressure on guys to go and do well. I think we're pretty set with the squad right now. You know, things can change, but yeah, the way that Stokesy leads that, it's, you know, more about enjoying yourself as opposed to putting pressure on yourself.
England opener Ben Duckett, and what an amazing 12 months it's been, Harmy. He was apparently nowhere near the England team a year ago, and he admitted that he still harboured ambitions, although they were tempered by his lack of contact for 5 years. He harboured ambitions just to play in one format, and here he is playing in all of them.
Yeah, it's how quickly the world's changed. I think largely down to himself, and I think you've got to give him full credit for that. That's the way I look at it. I think 3 years ago, I'd say Ben Duckett was still one of the best players in county cricket. And I've said that last year, and I would have said that the year before that, in the space of the last 3 years, he would have been on my tip of my tongue, picking sides. But I had a questioned attitude. I had a questioned, you know, the way he either lived life or the way he went about his daily business possibly was why he was averaging 35, not getting the scores that he should have. Got into a few scrapes from there. Sometimes you learn the hard way. I did. I'm not going to hear casting aspersions against Ben Duckett, because I was terrible sometimes. But sometimes you learn the hard way, and when sometimes you get asked questions about your attitude and try to change your lifestyle and look at yourself in the mirror more than anything else, it happens quicker for you. It really does, and I think that's probably what's happened to Ben Duckett. So I'm pleased for him, because he possibly has had a light on moment where he has looked himself in the mirror and gone, that probably wasn't the best decision I made. that wasn't the best decision I made. And that, and I had this look in the mirror a few times looking at me going, that definitely wasn't the best decision you ever made. But you learn quickly from that. And I think because of that, Ben, in the last 12 to 18 months, has turned himself into a more consistent player, a more professional player. And he's reaping the rewards from it now. And that, yeah, sometimes a penny drops a little bit later. And for me, they're the ones that survive the most because, you know, they've been through a bit of a bad time. They've questioned themselves, but they've worked it out for themselves. They haven't had to be told what to do. They haven't had to be spoon-fed everything. He's had to work hard to build his reputation back. And boy, now he's in all three formats and he's got a chance of potentially walking out middle of June. First test match, Edgbaston against Josh Hazlewood, Mitchell Starc, Pat Cummins in an Ashes series. Good for you, boy. I really am. I like them stories. I really do like them stories rather than somebody who just gets it easy, goes through motions, you know, doesn't always care about, you know, what's happening on the outside. And then when they do hit a bit of a bad spell, they don't know how to come through the other side of it. When you do sometimes look at yourself in the mirror and you have had a few mistakes, I think you rectify them quicker in the game situation when the pressure's on. So I'm pleased for Ben in that respect.
Talking of great stories, one that's been rambling on for 20 years now and it gets better and better is Jimmy Anderson. Phenomenal. Let's just hear from him in the build-up to the test.
The way I see the guys practice in the nets, the talent is just phenomenal, really. It's difficult to explain how amazing the talent we've got is. And I think that talent, coupled with the hunger that the guys have got to try and improve and the work ethic they bring every day to practice, I think, you know, those two things married together, I think that we can only get better from here. Some of the younger guys in particular, you know, like Zach Crawley, Ollie Pope, Harry Brook, you know, there's no ceiling for them. They can be as good as they want to be. You know, if they keep putting the work in, keep training hard, they want to learn all the time. They're talking to the senior players, the likes of Joe Root, the likes of Ben Stokes, trying to improve their game all the time, and if they keep doing that, then I'm sure that, you know, they can be as good as they want to be.
The one and only Jimmy Anderson says that this team can get better and better. He mentions the younger players. He's referring to Ben Duckett, of course, and Zach Crawley, Ollie Pope. It is staggering to think that England, a year or two, or a couple of years, 18 months ago, the England selectors, the hierarchy, felt that they needed to push Anderson and Broad out. They needed to move on, needed to succession plan, and now that seems to be happening, but alongside Broad and Anderson. So you can still develop and concentrate and help the next generation, I guess, because there's so much cricket. You don't need to push the proven match winners out.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And when you look at, and a lot's been mentioned in the build-up to this, about Broad and Anderson coming into the team, largely down, I'm in New Zealand, and it was me and Hoggy who were the ones that the Broad and Anderson took their players. In one day cricket, I didn't play one day cricket, Hoggy didn't play one day cricket, Broad and Anderson were excellent for a year, and they were probably had to wait a little bit longer than they needed to get into the team when they first came on the scene, largely down to the fact that the team were bowling quite well, everything was going nicely. We had just won the Ashes in 05, we'd given them away again in 6-7, but me and Hoggy were going all right. And then all of a sudden it was the right time for Broad and Anderson to come into the series after in the second test match here in 2008, I think it was. And I think England tried that with Mahmood and Fisher in the West Indies, and I think it quickly dawned on them that this is not the right thing to do. Can you have Broad and Anderson alongside the likes of Mahmood, Fisher and players like that? Because it will benefit you in the long run having that. I remember, you know, in that time, going back all them years, Jimmy was always around. Brodie was around. You know, we had just come from Sri Lanka where Brodie made his debut. And you learn quicker. And then it was the right time. It might have took them a little bit of time to finally kick us out, just two old fogies out. But once they did, and Jimmy spoke about it during the week when he said, you know, how much confidence they got from the fact that him and Stewart got the responsibility to replace two bowlers who had won the Ashes, who had played for a long period of time. and they took the mantle on and moved it to a whole new level from that point of view. And when I look at it now, there's nobody even close to still taking Jimmy's place. Jimmy still is the number one. I spoke about it from an Ashes point of view. Archer and Wood might be fit for the Ashes, but if Archer and fit for the Ash, ready for the Ashes, for me, Australia should be more worried about Anderson than they should be about Wood and Archer, because what Pearce gives you does funny things to batsman's technique. It does funny things to batsman's hands and head movement, and decision making. Now, if you've got Anderson at the other end, Jimmy Anderson's biggest thing for me is if you've got a poor technique, or if you've got a hole in your technique, or if you're not, fully with your technique or your movements, Jimmy will exploit that. So not only do I think because Wood and Archer will be fit for the Ashes, I still think Jimmy Anderson will be the main man come Australia. And that sounds ridiculous, because I think halfway through that series he'll turn 41, and that's a testament to him, a testament to this group and this side. And I think when people look at the way this side's going at this minute in time, they came out a week early, they went to Queenstown for a game of golf, they basically had a jolly, they had a nice holiday, they had a good time. Everybody thinks, they're having the best time of their lives. Their coach is coming out and going, we want to make memories and we want to be, having fun. Well, the one thing I will say, you can have all that, but these guys are working hard, because if they weren't working hard, there's nowhere in the world in the first test match in Mount Maunganui with a 37-year-old and a 40-year-old open a bowling for England. And that, for me, tells you that this side are having fun, but they're working extremely hard.
Well, of course, England have won 9 of their last 10 test matches, and you can see if they can make it 10 out of 11 as we bring you live an exclusive ball-by-ball commentary of the first test from Mount Maunganui right here on TalkSport 2. Our coverage gets underway at midnight on Thursday. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the one and only Steve Harmison. Next up in part 3, we'll focus on the hosts, who've suffered 2 significant blows ahead of the week's first test.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler and the number one bowler in the world, Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast, as always, from the following on feed, which is now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, let's talk about New Zealand, Harmy, for very different reasons. The two men who were probably expected to open the bowling, Carl Jameson wouldn't have opened, would he? But all-rounder Carl Jameson, out of the game for 18 months, came back, played the two-day game against England, but has now been ruled out with what is a suspected occurrence of a stress fracture of the back, which is devastating for him. And Matt Henry, now he was expected to open the bowling. He's been ruled out because he's on paternity leave, and we wish the Henry family all the very best there. But Trent Bolt also missing, because even though he's available, having finished playing in the T20 league in the UAE, the ILT20, the New Zealand selectors, understandably, I think, have decided to give preferential treatment to those who play in the domestic season and to those who are nationally contracted. There are a few raised eyebrows, aren't there, around local circles about Trent Bolt's here. He's available. He's keen to play, but they're not going to do that, and he did turn down his national contract. So, yeah, things are not going smoothly for the home side.
No, they're not. Jameson, that's huge. It's, you know, forget New Zealand's cricket team. It's a huge blow for Kyle himself. You know, the big man, we've seen him in Hamilton the other day. He got a whack in the ribs off Jimmy Anderson, believe it or not, when he was batting. It was great to see him, the big fella, back on the field, but unfortunately, if he has got a recurrence of that stress fracture, it's heartbreaking. It really is. It's heartbreaking. We know ourselves. We've just had Joffre Archer out for the best part of 18 months, and it's a long, long time to be out with, you know, one of your players who is a real superstar, and he is, Kyle Jameson, a bit like Ollie Robinson, that tall, high release point. You would have loved bowling on the surface that we are looking at now, which has not got any less greener since we've been rambling on for the last 45 minutes. But he'd love to have bowled on that. So that's a blow. Matt Henry, yes. It's a shame for the New Zealand cricket team, but families always come first. There's no question whatsoever. And I echo what you say, wishing them well. I just wonder, I really do, man, as I just wonder last night, did the selectors think, right, pick Trent Bolt, we've got no option, we've got to go back to him. I can see what they're trying to do, and I fully understand what they're trying to do, but if Trent Bolt doesn't play in this test match, I think his test career is over. Your selectors have said it, it's over. If they're not going to pick him when you are now, you're not threadbare, because Duffy's got the leading wicket taker in the country at this minute in time. So they're picking somebody in form, but Duffy, Bolt, I know who I'd rather face if I was Zach Crawley or Ben Duckett when it comes to it. But I wonder last night how close the selectors were to go, you know what, let's forget that. He is available. He's been playing in 2020 format. A phone call to Trent Bolt. Are you wanting to play? Are you fit to play? If he said in the positive, I think I would have picked him.
We haven't mentioned Neil Wagner. I mean, we talk about, the Jimmy Anderson's a great one, a fantastic story. But there's a few players who would have been regarded as unusually long in the tooth a few years ago. Neil Wagner's almost 37. He's still bowling at 140 kilometres an hour.
Yes, and he's somebody that I think New Zealand are going to need. It's going to be so crucial in this series when England are, you know, throwing the bat around and reverse sweeping seamers and you know, all the new sort of way that this positive England cricket team is under Ben Stokes. They're going to need Wagner's aggression. Has he still got that aggression, a 37-year-old, to go for 18, 20 overs in a day at the pace that he has? He's a very, very fit man. I know one person who'll be looking at it very closely over these next two test matches, and that'll be Darren Goff. He'd be desperate for Wagner to stay injury-free, not bowl as many overs, and be ready for the Yorkshire stint when it comes in April, May, and I think in early June, that Wagner goes over to the White Rose. He's going to be crucial for Tim Southee, because the experience that both Wagner and Southee have got now, without, even though Jameson's still a young man, he's played a bit of cricket. Henry played a lot of cricket, and Bolt, arguably one of the greatest seamers that New Zealand have ever had, not playing. I think Neil Wagner's is a key figure in this game. If he bowls well, New Zealand stand a chance. England might see it the other way, that he's aggression, he's pierce, they might go after him with what is very inexperienced backup, and not much other pierce that's on show. I think England might think, this: if we take Wagner down, then, you know, where do New Zealand go from there?
Which leads on a very nicely happy accident to my next question to you, which was, we're familiar with how a batting side will strategize in a one-day game, a 20-over game or a 50-over game, in terms of which bowler they might target. Are this England team doing that in Test cricket? So let's say Blair Tickner, who's made an inauspicious start for his New Zealand career in white ball cricket, let's say he's brought in and they play the extra bowler and somebody like Blair Tickner, who's inexperienced, not particularly quick and vulnerable. Would this England team in the test format target an individual?
Yeah, I think they would. I think, to target everybody that were the 7.5 and over they did in Pakistan. But I think they were calculated in Pakistan. They went at the right bowlers at the right time. But I look at this New Zealand side now, I'm sure they'll respect Tim Southee. I think they'll go after the pace of Neil Wagner. Whichever other bowlers they play, whether it's Tickner, whether it's Duffy, they'll fancy their chances at going at their 130 kilometre an hour. And Michael Bracewell, well, he's more of a part-time off-spinner rather than a full-time, than a Jack Leach type full-time bowler. And I can see England really targeting him. So the captain will be put under pressure, possibly not when he's bowling, but definitely when he's got his captain's hat on. I think England will respect Southee for what he is, which is a very, very good, like Jimmy Anderson, yeah, very skillful in and around that off-stump area. But I think the rest of them, I think England might target.
Very quick change in the production plan here, because Jack Leach was chatting a little bit earlier in the week as well about how his career has been transformed. So a little challenge for our producer, Scott Taylor, to see whether he can dig out that clip. Here we go. Here's Jack Leach talking about how things have changed for him under the new Stokes-McCullum leadership duo.
I think I'm getting better. I think I'm probably tougher as a player. And really understand my role in the team and probably just loving trying to win games, and you know, there's definitely that team feel. So I feel really good out there because I feel like I've got 10 other blokes sort of behind me, and I feel like everyone might be feeling like that. So that's a good thing, and it feels amazing to be part of.
Jack Leach talking about how things have been transformed. We talk about the team going hard, scoring at 7.5 and over. The seamers bowling with 5 slips in a gully. We don't often talk about Jack Leach, but it's true. Basball, go hard cricket, has also favoured Jack Leach big time.
It has, and it's favoured him nicely. I watched him bowl. He bowled about 12, 14 overs the other day at Hamilton. He bowled beautifully. Yeah, I had it on a... Yeah, nice little loop, good pace, landed it perfectly, and then do it. And an interesting one, and it is it was an interesting article he wrote. I don't know what article, who he wrote it with, or what it was about. I've seen a passage of it. We all know Jack Leach has got Crohn's, and it's an immune system disease. I've got a 10-year-old, 11-year-old nephew who suffers from it as well, Lennon, who he's had a tough time with it. You know, and it's not a very nice thing to have. And he talked about his stress levels before McCullum and Stokes had the reins at this in the national team. And he talked about Crohn's is brought on. It's not helped by stress and helped by being under pressure and having them sort of anxiety feelings. And he says his illness has been a lot better under Brendan McCullum. And I was reading this thing and I was thinking he feels a lot more comfortable, a lot less stress, and he feels a lot better with what he has to do day-to-day dealings with the illness that he does have. And when I was listening to that, I was like, it's another, not so much another tick in the box for McCullum and Stokes, but it just shows you where that dressing room must be. Yeah, it must be like New Year's Eve every day, and now Christmas Day every day in that dressing room. Where it's, come on, lads, what pressure have you got on you? If you were playing for England, you enjoy yourself. Yeah, you're not at home. You're not working a day-to-day job. You're enjoying yourself. And I think Jack has been one of the ones that really benefited from it, because the way he let go of the ball now, the way he lands the ball now, the freedom and the rhythm that he bowls with, I think is so much more fluid than he ever has been in the earlier part of his career. So I don't think it's a coincidence. I just think it's the environment that Jack Leach finds himself in, where he feels a lot better about himself, which is great to see.
And finally, we end this section with a comment from New Zealand head coach Gary Stead. I remember watching him make his debut for New Zealand as a very solid, very steady, consistent domestic performer, brought in at the top of the order, opened the batting, and was in every way unflashy and respectable. And now, here, 25 years later, he's one of the most respected men in New Zealand cricket. Modest, humble, not just respected, deeply admired, and I think and immensely popular. I don't think he's probably ever had a bad word to say about anybody, but he had some particularly good words to say about England.
What the each team will have to work out is what becomes really unique to them and I guess natural for the way that they play. And I guess it's still to be tested in some conditions whether it is, I guess, manageable to keep going like that. But there's no doubt that what they've done is playing with a smile on their face. They are trying to play at a rate to put other teams under pressure. And I think for the teams that their opposition, it's working out and I guess counteracting what is it that you're going to do to be able to compete and then hopefully apply pressure back. Because ultimately that's what Test cricket is about, is periods of time of applying and absorbing pressure over 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a lovely comparison to the kind of attitude that South Africa maybe arrived with in England in the summer, where, you know, you had Dean Elgar sort of basically saying, yeah, well, we'll see where the baseball, we'll see how that goes against us. Whereas you've got Gary Stead saying, it's brilliant.
Yeah, but the thing is, Dean Elgar came with an arrogant outlook of, nah, they'll not do it against my bowling attack. I think you wanted to sound like steely determined that, no, they won't do it against us, and that I think it got to him, where on this side of it, they know what Brendan McCullum's like, because most of these lot, if they didn't play with him, they'd been playing in and around him, and Gary Stead has seen the Brendan McCullum outlook probably since he was 18-year-old. So, and to be honest, I think Gary Stead might have had some influence on, you know, the coaching career of Brendan McCullum, a man who seems to be the nicest man in the world, as Gary Stead, who has got a steel streak in him, but he seems as though he enjoys, you know, coaching his team in such a relaxed and an enjoyable mentality and way that he gets the best out of his players. And that for me is why New Zealand always, even at other sports, but they're always there or thereabouts when it comes to tournament player and when it comes to, you know, a big stage and, you know, big games. This will be a tough series for England. It will be a tough series for New Zealand as well. But the one thing I would say about both coaches are, I think they'll not ramp up the pressure on their players by their actions. I think because of their natural persona, they will give the players as much freedom as they possibly can to express. And for me, that's the best way you get the best out of your subjects.
And a reminder, you can hear live and exclusive ball-by-ball commentary of this week's first test between New Zealand and England right here on TalkSport 2 from Thursday morning. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the former number one bowler in the world, Steve Harmison. Coming up in this section, we'll be speaking to Georgie Heath about the Women's Premier League and the Women's T20 World Cup taking place in South Africa. She's out there watching that England's progress and, in fact, the progress of everybody. But before we get to Georgie, let's talk about just quickly the Border Gavaskar Trophy. Australia absolutely dusted in Nagpur, literally and metaphorically. That wicket was turning square. I don't know whether they thought they were outside themselves by all the stories about doctoring the pitch that was going on. I don't know whether India encouraged those stories and made it look like the ground staff were messing around with the pitch when India scored 400, of course. But anyway, a massive amount for Australia to consider going into the second test.
Yeah, I mean, a huge amount. I think Australia largely beat themselves. They won the toss, batted first. Without Travis Head, their best player, probably in the last 12 months, unfortunately for no Cameron Green, no Mitchell Stark, who will likely come back into the second test match and make them stronger. But they seem to go with players, you know, Renshaw and Hanscom that played, who haven't played, you know, in making them a successful side in the past. And when you win the toss and you bat first in India, you've got to cash in. You've got to cash in, as simple as that. England showed when they were there, you know, a couple of years ago when we had it on TalkSport 2, that when England won the toss, Joe Root got 100, England won the game. Whenever England batted first after that, didn't score any runs, they lost the game. And to get 177 in the first innings is criminal. And that, arguably, is why Australia didn't have any sort of foothold in the contest. You can talk about doctoring pitches and everything that went on before that, But you've got to get first innings runs in India, and if you don't, you've got no chance of winning, and that's what happened. I look at this Australian side. It will get stronger for the next test match. Cameron Green will come back in. He's now fit. Mitchell Starc, who I think you've seen at the airport in Sydney, will come back in, and he'll be fit. That gives them a stronger unit. Will they drop David Warner? I'd be very surprised if they drop David Warner, but it wouldn't surprise me if Travis Head comes in for possibly Hanscom, and Cameron Green will come in for Renshaw in the middle order, and that gives them three bowling options, two spin options, and a more balanced Australia side going against India in the second test.
And just a reminder that you can hear ball-by-ball commentary of that second test match between India and Australia here on TalkSport 2, with coverage beginning straight after our coverage of New Zealand against England. Now, World Cups are always career-shaping events for men's and women's cricketers. This has been a particularly transformative week for the women's game, because apart from the T20 World Cup taking place in South Africa, it was of course the inaugural player auction in the WPL, the Women's Premier League, and suffice to say, lives were changed. Let's go to Georgie Heath.
New Zealand have struggled. I don't know what has happened there, what is going on. There's something, it's not on. The likes of Susie Bates, she's on a pair. Will you call it a pair in a tournament? I'm going to call it. She's got a pair. So that's not gone well. Sophie Devine did actually look heartbroken in her press conference yesterday. England, yeah, going along well. I mean, a bit of a wobble, I would say, against Ireland. I think there'll be things they'll be disappointed about, because they did lose those quick wickets and they were only chasing 106. They were sort of trying to get it done quickly, and then they were just throwing away wickets at the same time. So I think they'll want to go away and talk about that. I don't really necessarily see it coming down to net run rate, but you can never really be sure, and it's not worth throwing away your wicket. And then also, I didn't really know whether they were going to be a bit distracted perhaps with the whole WPL thing going on at the same time, because at one point I think I was watching, it shows Heather Knight on the screen, and then I watched my other screen because I had about five going on at once. Watch my other screen, and suddenly Heather Knight gets sold, and I was like, "Did someone come on with the drinks bottle?" And at the same time, be like, "By the way, you've just been bought." I'm not sure. Definitely distraction there, something that wasn't really thought through. But who knows? I can't really speak for the organisers, because you know it's not my area of expertise, organisation. So that was down to them. But a strange one. Australia looked absolutely phenomenal when they played the other day. Ash Gardner with that five for, I thought perhaps New Zealand might be in it at one point, which is weird to say something like a 140 is, you could be in this, but against Australia, that was a great score to restrict them to as such, which is such a weird thing to say. So not sure on that one, but I have been mighty, mighty impressed by Sri Lanka, who obviously shocked South Africa in the first game and then came back. That was such a good game against Bangladesh. I find in tournaments like this, I get really into games that I just would never have expected. And I actually went to a spin class and I had it on my phone at the same time. And I was like, I can't miss this, but I've got to, you know, I'm trying to double up in my life at the moment. And that was phenomenal, that game. But I also think maybe I'm just a massive loser, but who knows? So yeah, everyone's interesting. It's nice to see Ireland in there. And actually the likes of Gabby Lewis, she was going along well. Mary Waldron became the most capped Ireland player in the same game. So it's historic for Ireland. They obviously weren't in the last tournament, but I don't really still at the moment see past Australia. Prior to the tournament, I would have been like, England are right up there. They're not quite hit their straps yet. Maybe that's a good thing. They've still won both their games, but there's a few things they need to work on. Although we can't really ignore that innings from Alice Capsey yesterday, which was absolutely stunning. She's 18. I forget this because it feels like she's been around forever, but she is 10 years younger than I am, and she's absolutely bossing it. She then also got sold to the WPL. She's also casually got a metal plate and like seven screws in her shoulder from when she broke her collarbone or whichever part of her anatomy in December. So she's going along quite well. And I really have a soft spot for Sarah Glenn as a bowler, and I think we almost underrate her, because we have Sophie Eccleston, who is phenomenal, best bowler in the world, a spinner, but I think that Sarah Glenn if she can perform well throughout this tournament, will be a really, really big part of England's potentially victory campaign, if they can be up to it. So, yeah, I think Sarah Glenn is really key. And she was great yesterday. Sophie Huckstone was great. And they seem to be enjoying themselves, which is always key because you're all out there together for such a long time. There's going to be ups and downs. You're going to have people selling people not to the WPL just casually on top of everything. So it's going to be an interesting one, but I'm confident.
Okay. Well, as I said, we'll be keeping right on top of things at the World Cup. So just going back to the Women's Premier League, 14 Australians sold, obviously the best of the rest, and lots of Indian players, obviously, and that makes cricketing and commercial sense. The very best players from the other teams, the best England players were sold, although there were a few that were unsold, which were eye-catching. And yeah, it just seems very Australia-India heavy. And a few of South Africa's best players also not sold. The best were sold. But it's just give us a snapshot, your sort of overall impression. There were some big numbers as well, weren't there? I mean, like, totally life-changing.
Yeah, I mean, they started, you know, lot one, Smriti Mandanna. We're going to start with the big one, which was the one that everyone was talking about beforehand. And so, then she goes for 340 lakh off the bat, literally first person. And I was like, there is going to be some huge money in this. And I was sort of trying to watch the live stream. It's a strange thing to watch. I still can't quite get my head around literally auctioning people. It's very odd. I would prefer it to be called a draft, but one day I'll just be more normal about it. I don't know. But that was phenomenal. And then we saw, obviously, Sophie Eccleston went for quite big numbers. And then it was Nat Siverbrunt at 320. She was the second highest of everyone, I think. And it's not surprising, to be honest. You know, she is ICC Player of the Year last year, Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy. So you can't really be surprised that she went for such big money. But I think what I quite like about the tournament is that they're looking to the youth. So obviously we think of someone like Catherine Siverbrunt, you know, we're like, wow, one of the best players we've seen, this, that and the other. But she is towards that end of her career. And you think that some of these teams are investing in the youngsters. We've seen some of the girls from the under-19 World Cup, the likes of Shweta Sarawat, who was part of that victorious Indian team in the under-19 World Cup. She is part of this WPL. And I think for youngsters like that, it is life-changing. Some of the money's life-changing for anyone, like Nat Siverbrunt. Don't know how she can walk. She's got so much money in her pocket now. But yeah, and I think it's exciting for the youngsters. And then the likes of Capsi got picked up, Izzy Wong, who hasn't been selected for this full England squad. She was out there before the tournament, so she's part of it. And I think it's a good investment in the future and that side. And then also the likes of being, you know, mentored by, I would imagine, someone like Smriti Mandanna is going to captain her side. So having that sort of brushing shoulders with the big dogs at the same time as developing while also earning a hell of a lot of money at the same time. And I think they're quite good fun, these tournaments. They do all get to know each other very well, which does make it more enjoyable because then they spend a lot of their time of the year with these players from all over other countries. So it is quite a unifying thing at the same time. And as much as I say, I don't like to see people being sold and this, that and the other, it was very exciting at times when, yeah, and it is quite exciting. It's far more exciting than watching Flog It.
Thank you very much indeed to Georgie Heath. Fascinating stuff. And we'll keep, obviously, all over the coverage as the Women's T20 World Cup progresses. Harmy, just a couple of minutes left. As always, far too much to fit in. Owen Morgan announces his retirement from all cricket. I'd like to talk to you about the county championship as well. And if we have time, maybe even Tagnarai and Chanderpool. But let's begin with Owen Morgan eventually saying that the journey has come to an end.
Yeah, I'm surprised he carried on after he announced his international retirement. Probably the character and the man he is, he probably thought, I've signed these contracts to play franchise cricket. I'm going to honour them because I'm an honourable person. He's a great man, is Owen Morgan. And we've spoke a lot on the breakfast show and on following on
and on the Cricket Collective over the course of the last 6 months about the greatness of Owen Morgan. I don't think we really appreciated him until he finally hangs up his boots. We're going to see a lot more of him in, obviously, in the commentary box. But some of the players are very, very thankful for the impact that he had on English cricket, because he took a punt. He's a gambler. He loves his horses. He's a gambler. He took a punt in 2015 to say to the likes of Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Sir Alistair Cook, you're not one-day international players. You're not one-day players. You're not white ball players anymore. We're going to pick players who can attack this game. And there were probably eyebrows raised when he did that. And between 2016, 2017, there were a few bumps in the road. But from 2017 to 2019, he built a group that took the game away from everybody else in white ball cricket, culminating with probably one of the greatest achievements any England captain's had, which is to lift the World Cup. So congratulations, Owen, on a wonderful career. His numbers will speak for themselves. I think over 10,000 international runs. But I think his leadership legacy will be the one that will live on for many, many years to come.
County Championships tweaked its points scoring system for the 10th time in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're going from 8 points a draw to 5 points a draw. Obviously, more chances. Trying to get it to play a more positive brand of cricket. I think the jury's still out on that. We're going back to the old system. If you take points away from a draw, you're going to end up pitches like what we're seeing right now in Mount Maunganui. And the only reason the pitch at Mount Maunganui is as green as it is because we've had a cyclone Gabrielle, and we've had rain for the last 5 days. We go back to 70-mile-an-hour bowlers just landing it because results are more important. There's more points for results. I think they could have done it a little bit different, but we all think that when rules are changing. If you wanted to make more positive, yeah, you could ramp up the bonus points for scoring runs quicker rather than taking the draw away. For me, if you can't win the game, then don't lose the game. That is still, for me, is a positive outcome. And you could give more bonus points for the quicker you get to certain number of runs, rather than just say it's only going to be 5 points for a draw. Well, let's see what happens. But I really do fear that we're going to go back to the old day pitches where we are marking 22 yards out from the outfield, and the likes of, no disrespect to the likes of Darren Stevens, but a 70-mile-an-hour bowler taking 50, 60 wickets a year. For me, that's not cricket.
And finally, Gary Balance scored 100 on his return to Test cricket with Zimbabwe, the country of his birth, and Tagenrayan Chanderpool made a double 100, which made you smile.
It made me chuckle. I'm pleased for Gary. I really am. He's gone back to his native homeland. He's got 100. He's a wonderful player, Gary. I like the guy as a person. I spent a bit of time with him when I played with him, and I hope he finds happiness back in Zimbabwe. And Tagenrayan Chanderpool, my old mate Shiv Narine, one of the greatest cricketers I've ever played with. And imagine the conversation going back. Dad, what was your highest score? 203. Well, I'm just getting 206, I think it was, in my fourth ever test match. I'm sure Shiv will turn around and chuck it back at him, but I played 155, 160 test matches. Let's see how many test matches you play, son. So it'll be an interesting conversation between Shiv Narine and Tagenrayan, but the one thing I'm chuffed to bits to see is that little young kid that came to, he was just about the time he was born. Around when Shiv Narine was at Durham, going on to follow his father's footsteps. Good on you, son, and keep it going.
And finally, after tours to the Caribbean, the Sri Lanka and South Africa with TalkSport, COVID kept us in the studio for a couple of years, but how good to be back on the road.
Brilliant to be back on the road, and I can't wait to bring you all ball-by-ball coverage of the New Zealand versus England two test matches. You know, picturesque Mount Maunganui at the moment, then on to Wellington. I think it's going to be a fascinating series. Disappointing that New Zealand aren't going to be at full strength. England won't mind. Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum's roadshow bangs on. And me, you, Manners, John Norman, Mike Atherton, Jacob Oram, and many more will bang on trying to give you the best coverage possible.
You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the great Harmy. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. So we'll be back at the same time next week to look back at this first Test match between New Zealand and England. Every ball, live and exclusive, here on TalkSport 2. But for now, this has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.